2020 was a tumultuous year. The question we must all ask going forward is simple. What values, ethics, and behaviors from the old world are we going to preserve? And what new perspectives are we going to embrace as we build our future civilizations? This is the New World Podcast with Ariz Kaki and Akhil Samji.
Welcome back to the New World Podcast on the Gen Z series. I'm your host, Ariz.
And I'm Akhil.
And today we have an amazing guest. She's 15 years old, and we're going to talk to Naila Moldu today about a multitude of topics. So Naila, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So let's just get right in. So as I mentioned, you're 15 years old, very impressive resume and CV. You're working on some of the most amazing projects with experts in varying disciplines within nanotechnology, sustainable and renewable energy. And you're also additionally a best-selling author. So what drove you towards pursuing these initiatives, like rather than waiting until like your post-secondary or like graduate school years?
Yeah, I think when you look around and you see all the problems in the world, like there are a lot. And so one problem that really captivated me was climate change and looking at our global consumption of fossil fuels and the detrimental impacts that this is having on basically everything in the world. And so I looked at these problems and I thought, like, why do we wait until we're adults to try to, you know, solve them? Because a lot of people say, I want to make impact, I want to make a difference, and yet they don't start. And starting is the only way to solve these problems. And so I think that you can just start at whatever age, and it just starts with research and exposure. And so what I did was I looked into these problems and I gained a technical depth, and then I built projects in the fields, because that's how you can gain a degree of expertise, by actually applying your knowledge in these new ways. And so by doing this research and reading papers and writing your own articles and producing your own content, then ideas will just begin to flow. So for example, coming into this year, I knew I wanted to build a better solar panel, and I didn't really know how to do that. And, you know, if I was just like, I'm just going to build it on the spot with no prior knowledge, you can't really do that. And so through my research and you know, reading these papers and things like that, that's when ideas began to come to me about how to actually create a better solar panel. And if you love the problem, then really, you know, you're going to find a way to create that solution if you are sticking with that problem, if it's something that you're actually really passionate about.
Right. And I think you just nailed on something that I wanted to address in the second question, which is there's this idea of like anything that, as you mentioned, if you're interested and passionate about solving a problem, you're going to naturally get the ideas, the inclination to go for it, to research some of the background information, some of the current industry leaders, what certain proposals are being made. And then that's where you kind of find your niche in between, right? Often we have this curiosity problem where we're kind of curious as to what something is about, a certain topic, but we never really address the actual root problem for that topic to be used, right? Often with technology, especially. Yeah. And so I wanted to ask you about like something like a learning curve, because like a lot of the disciplines that you're dipping your toes in have like a very steep learning curve. And especially for someone your age, although I don't doubt your abilities, how do you combat this idea of like getting stuck? Because you probably are going to mention this as well. There's been plenty of times where you've gone through adversity with regards to learning some of the things that you've learned and some of the successes that you've haven't came overnight, right? It's often been months worth of work, time and time investment being poured in, reaching out to certain experts. How do you combat like getting stuck and then sometimes the gaps in your knowledge? Because often I feel, not just personally, but with other Gen Zers especially, the ones who kind of want to do something different, like it can be in a variety of varying industries, but they often get stuck and then that's it. Like that's basically like game over. They're going to go back to like what they were doing earlier. And then when someone just asks them like how everything was going, it's like, well, it didn't work for me. Or I think it just doesn't work at all. Like I have to wait till, you know, I graduate, or I need to have like a certain level of like qualifications before I address this issue or before I engage in this sort of practice. How do you deal with, I guess, the steep learning curve? And then often sometimes when you get to a point, you have a gap in knowledge. How do you address that?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true because, you know, people get really excited about solving a problem, then suddenly it gets hard and they just stop. But again, I think it goes back to falling in love with the problem. And when you do, and when you do realize that you want to build these projects, you need to be okay with failure. And yeah, I think the root cause really is failure of why people stop and the fear of like embarrassment or judgment. Like if I put this out there, then, you know, I'm going to get judged. But instead of fearing failure, you need to learn how to embrace it. Because if you are solving one of the world's biggest problems, you are going to fail. And, you know, that's inevitable and that is okay. But if it's if you're doing something that you really do care about, then you need to be okay with that potential outcome of failure. And you need to be able to get past that. Because, you know, if you love, like, you love the outcome and you love like what could come out of this, then you will find a way to keep going. And so just having that perseverance. So for example, with me within writing, I definitely had to persevere and I definitely failed a lot because I tried to get another book published before this. And what ended up happening was just like mass rejection. And so I could have said, you know, it got hard and like, I have to go back, revise, maybe write another book. And that's hard. And I might fail again. And, you know, a lot of time went into this and I just ended up failing. But that's not the only thing that happened. I did learn a lot from that experience. And then I took that. I wrote another book. I went back to querying agents and publishing houses. And, you know, I got that contract because I love the idea of, you know, having that book and, you know, being able to inflict change within my reader, because I really like to put like these deep messages into my novels because I've seen the power of words through reading. And so you need to fall in love with what you're doing and you need to be okay with failure is what I would say to that question.
You know, speaking about failure and, you know, being motivated, I know in the pandemic, a lot of people are now just going on Netflix, on social media and just being really distracted because they're always saying, oh, there's always tomorrow. But like really tomorrow never comes. And so I wanted to ask, what has been your motivation throughout this pandemic to really go through it? I know you talked about loving the problem, but is there anything else that gets you through it to really take the time to research and not get distracted by other things?
Yeah. So I think it's important to, you know, have an end goal for yourself. And my end goal is making impact, making a difference. And you can't do that if you're just watching Netflix 24/7, right? So you have to ask yourself if what you're doing makes sense for you. And that's not only watching Netflix. It's like maybe you're part of like every single club at school. Why is that? Is it because it looks good to other people? And is it bringing you value? And is it bringing you closer to the goal that you want to get to? And so for me, like maybe being a part of a billion different clubs that don't bring me value isn't the best option. And instead, I could be spending my time doing research in solar energy or something like that. And so just evaluating what you're doing on a day-to-day basis and asking yourself, is it bringing me one step closer to where I want to be? And if it's not, then there's something that you should change about your schedule. And that's not to say that you need to be like working 24/7 to get to your end goal. Rest is really important. And like revitalizing and, you know, letting yourself relax. And I definitely still watch Netflix and right. Take time off and things like that. I think if you research 24/7, you work 24/7, that's probably a bad thing. So just like taking that time for yourself is very important as well.
Yeah. And speaking of that, before we get to the next section, because I wanted to ask you about your strategies with regards to time management, because I think you just mentioned something really key, which is having an end goal. Or like we've discussed previously on previous episodes here about like this idea of like building a hierarchy of values for yourself, this idea that like you put something at the top as being your like your North Star or whatever the case may be. As for you, you just said making impact, right? Others might have an even more niche goal. Like maybe they just are really interested in a particular industry problem, but even within that problem, there's a sub problem. And I'm like, go for it. If you have the more accurate you can get, the more closer you are, essentially, I always say, to the goal. And so I guess this idea of like having a hierarchy of values, putting something as your North Star and then working towards it, I think a lot of people are missing that right now because we're probably like bombarded with a bunch of like narratives and things to do, and there's so many cool things to do, and FOMO, and like you're working on one thing. Yeah. As we mentioned earlier, even when you get stuck, often I've realized is like there's people who like as you mentioned, like they get stuck and then they go for, like, keep on learning. Then there's people who get stuck, they stop. I think there's like even a third category. They get stuck and then they jump onto the next thing. Yes. And then they get stuck again and they jump onto the next thing. And so what I've noticed is like, how do you like address the idea of time management then, if that's the case? Because like we're getting constantly bombarded, we're living in a more short-term like attention society. We kind of like the clicks, we kind of go for whatever's being popular, being said. We want something to become easy to us, stuff like that. So, and I think a lot of that derives from the idea that sometimes people, let's say they do get the hierarchy of values. Let's say they do have their North Star. Maybe it is they want to empower everyone in the world with the ability to live their own life on their terms. Let's say, for example, as a generic goal, they have their goal. They haven't built a system, however, to that goal, right? Often we set goals. You never build a system to achieve those goals. And so that often comes in the form of time management, of productivity, and of building these systems because you know yourself the best, right? And often we're getting to a time where, like I said, it's much more distracting. It's much more easier to kind of deviate from your main goal and your main path. What are some of your suggestions, or if it even is time management, it could be something totally different. But with time management and productivity, what is your unit of measurement? How do you measure empirically or anecdotally? Like, how do you measure what you've done in a day or your day's worth of work? Like, how do you like account for that?
Yeah. So for me, something that really helps is every night I sit down and I always have a checklist of the things that I wanted to accomplish in the day. And so I'm like checking them off as I go, and I'll see like, what did I get done today? And what didn't I get done today? And why didn't I get that done? And then I also set myself goals for the next day, and it keeps kind of going like that. And also like just adding in other things, like what was I grateful for today? What was my act of kindness today? Things like that I think are very important. But setting yourself these daily goals and then actually checking them off, because if you are setting yourself these great goals, like, I don't know, just like 10 amazing goals, but you're not doing any of them, then there's a problem. And if you are sitting down and asking yourself, why didn't I get that done? Maybe the cause is procrastination. But if you go deeper than that, like, why are you procrastinating? Maybe it's because you're on your laptop and you have a bunch of social media on your laptop and you're leaving all these tabs open. Well, then you can do something about that. And maybe you can have like a work laptop, or then like have all the entertainment apps on your phone and do that instead. So by looking at what you've gotten done today and what you want to get done tomorrow, and seeing if you are consistently hitting your goals and having that discipline for yourself, is a way that I manage my time. And then also just having like my monthly goals and making sure that I hit all of them and that my daily goals are reflecting that.
Are ready to move on to the technical side?
Yeah. And before we get to that, is there anything besides the idea of the agenda, the writing down of certain goals? Is there anything that you do to kind of optimize your own capacity to learn much more quicker, as you mentioned previously? Because some of the things that we have is much more of a steep knowledge curve, gaps in your knowledge. And the fact is that I personally think it's a combination of a few things, because personally for me, I just used to think that it was, well, if you organize the system correctly, if you wrote down everything a night prior, like everything that you did the next day, if you set everything up right, if you organize your laptop and everything else, do you think that there is something a bit more deeper than that, that goes like one layer deeper, which is the way like we were wired essentially? And is there something you think that either you do or people that you know within your cohort do that could possibly be of value to other Gen Zers? Because a lot of people sometimes the way they're wired, what they're investing their time in, what they're using their brain capacity and brain power for often tires them out. They're not really working optimally. Maybe the thing they're eating, the physical activity. What do you consider those dimensions as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I would say to that, my deep answer would be one word, and that is rest. Because people can set themselves these really awesome goals, and maybe you're hitting them for a week and you're just like working all the time, but that's not sustainable. And that will probably lead to burnout. And so a lot of people think of like rest as a bad thing. And if you really want to go hard at something, it should be a full-time grind. Right. But a full-time grind isn't always, you know, the best thing. And you should be structuring in time to, you know, meditate and, you know, take your dog for a walk and, you know, just like go outside, get into nature, spend time with your family. Because if you are always on a screen and you're always working, that's not going to lead to the best outcomes. And being on your screen all the time definitely isn't the best thing for your health either. So just taking care of yourself in that sense, and also like putting time for you to work out or do yoga, things like that will often optimize like what you're doing and hitting your goals. So I would say rest is very, very key to success.
Okay. And now I think we're ready to move on to the more technical side. So I noticed your recent projects and what you talked about is nanotechnologies focused on solving climate change. And I'm really excited that you're working on that, because I wanted to ask you a question, because my major is in sustainable and renewable energy engineering. And so I'm really passionate on working on solar cells. And so I'm happy to see younger people are also taking on the initiative to solve this problem. And I wanted to ask, what papers did you look at? What did you look at to learn about these new technologies? And how did you know what was on the rise?
Yeah, so I think it's just all about like exposing yourself to these technologies. And so I was really lucky. I joined this program, this after school program called the Knowledge Society this year. And they're basically explorers, which are compilations of resources on a specific topic. So I had all these topics laid out for me and I could just go through them and look at resources. But you can do that for yourself, like through like looking at courses and articles, things like that. And I came across solar energy. And so first it was more like surface level articles and just understanding what it really was. And then to build on that, I actually wrote my own article on it. So like, what is solar energy? Because being able to explain it to people, that is really key. And then after that, after I had that and I was able to explain it to somebody, I went deeper into a more niche area. And so I was specifically looking into leveraging quantum dots for solar energy. And so I remember I was like looking through research papers that were 100 pages, and I was like looking up every second word on every page and trying to understand it. And through that, then I wrote my first scientific paper actually outlining what I had learned. So first starting, surface level, and then going deeper, and then also building projects and content around what you're learning. Because when you absorb content and it's really interesting to you, I think you should produce your own content on it. It doesn't have to be an article. It could also be like a video, something like that. And then applying that knowledge, because when you do start learning about these niche topics in depth, you will identify gaps and holes here and there. And you can ask yourself, what could be done to solve this? And it doesn't always have to be really extravagant. It could be something really simple that just nobody has thought of. So that's kind of the process that I go through. But I think building projects is really key to that, because you're actually forcing yourself to apply that knowledge.
Yeah, and I might have to cite you on some of my papers in the future.
Oh my gosh.
But going on to that, I was wondering if you could talk more in depth about the materials you were going to use to make your solar cells. So I know you said quantum dots, and I also saw you using graphene as well.
Yeah. So those are the two kind of nanomaterials that I'm using. And so I designed a transparent and flexible solar cell. It took a while, it took quite a few months. I was working on it this year. And now I'm actually getting the materials to go and work on it in a lab. But it's a graphene and then quantum dots. It uses willow glass substrate. So it's basically a flexible glass, giving it that flexibility factor. And then there's a perovskite layer as well, and then spiro-OMTAD. I think those are the primary kind of layers that I'm using in the solar cell. But yeah, right now I'm actually going to be getting to work with them, which is really cool, because what I've been doing in solar so far has mainly been very research-based. And when I have an idea, like writing a paper on it or a proposal, but I haven't gotten to work on anything hands-on within solar. So I'm really excited for that.
Right. And this opportunity that you have in Mars, this internship and working in the lab. So as you just mentioned, you're working with particularly graphene and quantum dot technology. And this is more of a recent iteration in the technological space, right? So I know you just said majority of your work has been in the research department of this problem. Where do you see the applications of technology going? Like, where do you see the rate of adoption, the rate of application? And how does the current space look like? Before you answer that one, how does the current space with regards to solar energy look like? What are some of the problems per se?
Yeah. So right now, solar energy is pretty inefficient. That's a pretty big problem. And the way that nanomaterials can be leveraged is really helpful because nanomaterials, you know, they're really small, they're transportable, they have all these crazy benefits. And so they can not only make very cost-effective solar cells, but they can also boost the efficiency. So for example, right now, something called ITO is used in these transparent solar cells. Transparent solar cells aren't actually commercialized yet, but ITO has its own downfalls in terms of efficiency and, you know, other factors and cost. But when you look at graphene instead, it offers all of these benefits. And it's never really been looked at in depth for an application like this, but now it's beginning to. And graphene is just one example. So if we're looking at quantum dots can be used as an absorber layer, and they can also be, you know, really, really helpful in terms of boosting that efficiency in also a cheap way. And so I really think that this is going to go far because harnessing the sun's energy is something insanely cool, but I don't think we are fully taking advantage of it yet. And I think nanotechnology is going to be the key to commercializing solar energy. So within, I don't know, maybe the next 10 years, if we're looking at the solar industry, I think it is going to look very different. And I think nanotechnology is going to be playing a very prominent role.
And, you know, when I was researching solar cells, a lot of the times I noticed photovoltaics are being used. Would you be able to describe the difference between that and the materials you're using now? If you know.
So I think the biggest kind of material used in traditional solar cells right now is silicon. And silicon is, it has a lot of problems, right? And so I don't know, like I haven't looked, I need to look like more into depth to be able to fully explain it. But when you're looking at band gaps, it has something called an indirect band gap. And that makes it really hard to absorb a photon because at the same time, it needs to absorb this vibrational kick in energy called a phonon. And so if you look at perovskite instead, it only needs to absorb a photon because it has something called a direct band gap. And so that really helps. And then also these indirect band gap materials are a lot more reliant on temperature. And so something that you'll hear oftentimes with solar is like very external factor dependent. And if you leverage perovskite instead of silicon for solar cells, then that goes down a little. So I think that's a big part. And then another part of it is in terms of like, if you're looking at making a flexible solar cell right now, then what people are going to tell you is like plastic. But the problem with plastic is that it degrades in sunlight. And that's why flexible solar cells have never really been looked at as if it could be something that we could use on a day-to-day basis. It's mainly just glass. But with these new advancements like Willow glass, then that suddenly becomes an open option. And now you can like have bendable solar panels. And that could have some pretty cool implications like smart clothing, things like that. Or you could actually like sew an inner clothes, pretty cool stuff. But yeah, that'll be further down the line.
Right. Yeah. I think you're hitting on something key, which is the so-called shift between the move from silicon to essentially more synthetic materials, right? Particularly in the space of nanotechnology. And I think this could be driven by a multitude of forces, but I think I was recently reading that there's this sort of concern of shortage of these so-called naturally occurring materials, i.e. silicon or lithium ion batteries. The issue with the electric vehicle industry right now is people are worried about the fact that the prices per electric vehicle are going to double despite the opposing trend a few years ago, which is as market forces go, the price per product obviously becomes cheaper because there's more competitors jumping in. Now you have Ford with their electric vehicle. You have everyone with their own electric vehicles now. So you would assume that the price per vehicle for any of these companies would be super low. But with the problem going that there's shortages of some of these naturally occurring elements and substances, there's a lot of geopolitics involved. There's a lot of other external tertiary and quaternary like issues. Since you're into nanotechnology, do you think that as you mentioned, the key will be bringing the so-called solar people, let's call them, with the nanotechnologists and kind of having that synthesis and synergy in between to be the future and to essentially push solar over the edge of like commercialization and then getting it into the hands of the basic consumer as those market forces play out? So where is the role in like more synthetic substances and synthetic materials going? Because maybe you're not sort of, I don't know if you're that familiar with the research on it, but besides its application within solar materials and photovoltaics to improve those, do you see that there's a push now to sort of look into more synthetic materials and then If so, what are some of the other underlying technologies behind that? Like, you're looking at like quantum simulations or simulations within labs and then computing powers. It kind of gets to that whole other domino effect. So what are you seeing in that space?
So I honestly don't know if I entirely understood the question. Are you asking like other applications of nanotech? I don't want to give like an uninformed answer there.
What I'm referring to is the idea that like nanomaterials per se, like synthetic nanomaterials that are being harnessed in the lab, this idea that there's not being a push for working in, as you mentioned, in nanotechnology with the ability to sort of synthesize these, like working with graphene and working with other sort of substances. Are you seeing, what does the nanotechnology space in particular look at right now? Because as you're saying, there's the application into solar is just happening now. Like, how about like right. synthetic materials, if you kind of looked into that?
Yeah. So I would say like in terms of the biggest nanomaterials being used for those applications right now, the biggest ones I see are probably graphene and quantum dots, but there are other arising materials as well. So I would say the top nanomaterial used in solar right now is probably going to be quantum dots. And that's just going to be super helpful in the future because it really enhances the efficiency. And graphene isn't really there to boost the efficiency. It does like a little bit, but it's more there for the transparency factor. Yeah. But as time progresses, more and more nanomaterials, I'm sure, are going to be like further research into. So for example, there are actually graphene quantum dots. Yeah, they just put them together and, you know, they had these like really amazing quantum dots, except I think they lack a little bit in efficiency. But that is definitely a field of research being looked into, and it does have some amazing factors. So with quantum dots right now, they're made from pretty toxic materials, and that is actually solved with the graphene addition. And so that could have some pretty cool impacts there. So as time progresses, I do think that I think nanotech will play a more increasing role within that industry because it is having all of these wonderful implications.
For sure.
Do you want to move on to personal brand?
Sure. I guess before that, we can maybe look into some of the technologies over here.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, I wanted to sort of talk to you about the problem that you're solving at the end of the day, which is the whole climate crisis. And as you mentioned it earlier, when Akila asked you, what was your inspiration and motivation to getting into this particular area? We had a guest on, a Gen Z guest, a couple episodes ago, when we spoke about the, you're the answer to this question, actually, because we spoke to him about, he works for an organization called Climate Cardinals, which is this social activist pack, essentially, that's bringing awareness to the developing world about climate change with regards to best practices, trying to eventually advise governments and lobby to them in the developing world. And so one of the biggest problems I spoke to him about was the biggest error that's happening within the solar industry right now, or the, not just solar, but the climate change area, is that there's a sort of disconnect because the people, the proponents against investing further in this industry, all the fossil fuel lobbyists, all those type of people, the establishment people, they're referencing the idea that the push towards renewable energies is being fueled by an activist bone, not necessarily like a technological or an economic bone. And so I kind of brought that problem up to him, and he sort of spoke about the fact that, like, yeah, you might be right, because majority of that coverage about climate change per se, or all these, like, you know, you'll see like a politician or you see some celebrity tweet or say something from an activist tone. You'll never see them, for example, share a research paper that you like that you referenced, right? Because it's not, I guess, the hot thing right now. And so but the basic problem that I underlined to him was that we can probably get on solving this bigger problem if we sort of just fix the pipeline between the technologists and the activists on this problem, and then eventually get the government in there, which is supposed to be the regulator. So do you see that problem happening right now? And if so, what would you do about it?
Yeah, for sure. So I think right now, a big problem is that people are like, oh yeah, like, you know, we shouldn't use oil because it's like the environment point of view, but it's good for the economy. That's what a lot of people think. Like, we're using oil for the economy. But what humanity is failing to realize is that biodiversity underpins the economy. And so everything is interconnected. And a lot of people don't take it from that economic standpoint, but the economy is like being heavily impacted by the climate crisis. And we're just failing to realize that. Like, more people just think it's about the environment. That's not only what it's about. And so I think in terms of like getting people to know that, we we do need to be more educated about these kinds of things. Because, you know, like I said, the economy is just viewed as the benefit, but we are going to see a downfall in that. And we already are. And so just like educating ourselves about that and putting more resources out there in terms of the economic downfall, because right now there's a lot of, you know, I don't know the word, like kind of greenwashing in terms of like what sustainability is really about. And sustainability is something that we need to be able to have a future. And we're not realizing that. Right. We're not realizing that without a sustainable shift, then we are going to suffer in many, many different ways. And we may not even be able to breathe in clean air in like 20 years. And so we do need a lot more coverage in terms of that. And hopefully that inflicts inspiration in some people to, you know, maybe apply their knowledge, go deeper, build projects, best case scenario for sure. Just get more like projects being built within climate change, because that's something more people need to be addressing.
Right.
And I don't know if you know a person by the name of Alex Epstein. Have you heard of that?
I've definitely heard of him, but I don't know if I can place exactly what he does.
Okay, but basically he's an advocate for fossil fuels. And I'm actually reading a book about of his called The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels.
Okay.
And that he's saying that we should continue to use fossil fuels and ditch renewable energy from a moral standpoint, because developing countries, to them, it's more expensive to get renewable energy than it is energy from fossil fuels. And he gives like a variety of examples. He also talked about like the recent Texas blackout, of how they are focused more on solar and like wind energy. And when that failed, the fossil fuels had to pick up the slack, but because there wasn't enough, that's why they had a blackout. Like, he gave a variety of examples. So with people like him, what would you say to them to bring them to your side and shift them into the viewpoint of we should be using renewable energy?
I think I would say like you're only looking at it from one point of view, but there are a lot of emerging technologies that will be able to completely take over fossil fuels. And what I would bring up, the first thing that comes to mind when you say that, is fusion energy. And that I think is going to make extreme impact in the future, because not only is it abundant and, you know, green and good for the environment and efficient, but it also is really cheap. Like, it would be like the startup costs are pretty expensive right now, but once we get it commercialized, it would be as cheap as fossil fuels. And so instead of, you know, doing that research into convincing people why fossil fuels are a better alternative, you could probably be looking into things that are better worth your time, like fusion energy, and, you know, fully understanding that. And I do think we need more people working on that as well. And that does need more coverage, because there are a lot of advancements there. And in the next 10 years, fusion is going to look very different. And I honestly do believe that at some point when I'm alive, like in the future, it will fuel our electricity, because it has these outstanding implications. And there are a lot of really smart people tackling it.
Yeah, I definitely like your answer, because to that problem, I think the type of people that you're talking about, per se, like you and actual technologists and innovators in the space, are sort of missing from the dialogue. As you mentioned, there's really no education around, or there's this massive PR stunt to show people what sustainability is. Like, it's like something that just is like a word. It's like a huge like blanket theme, like, oh, we just have to be more sustainable, like as if it's really easy.
Yeah.
Like overnight you can just come up with like a utopian solution. But I think what you're aiming at is like, I completely understand the person who says, I completely understand what the person who says, I'm coming from, like, I'm supporting fossil fuels from a moral standpoint. I disagree. However, here's what I would propose in advance, which is looking at a sort of intermediary step, because eventually you want to get to the fusion. But as you mentioned, you want to get to the most sustainable of all, which is harnessing the so-called sun up in the sky, essentially, at the end of the day, right? And I think what you're addressing is sort of missing from the dialogue. And I think it's pretty refreshing to see someone young address that kind of problem, because it's like you're not really suggesting some sort of like out of the blue solution, like we should just get rid of everything. It's like, no, like put research into fusion, put research into solar. Let's compete, let's work at it, let's see what the best solution is. And of course, life will have trade-offs, right? You can't really get everything that you want. But because you're I think the way you're tackling it, which is from a STEM technological standpoint, I think more education should go into, if people are actually interested in the climate crisis, but majority of Gen Z are, we all are, I think we're all concerned about the fact that we want to have a sustainable planet. We want to have access to the exact same resources, materials as our ancestors did. We can probably do that from a perspective that's not really the way it is being taught now, more from a technological kind of understanding trade-offs and market forces and technology, as you're saying, which I think is a better solution for the long term. So yeah, hopefully I'm optimistic about that.
And I think now we can move on to personal branding. If you want to?
Yeah.
For sure. So we wanted to talk about your personal branding, like with your website and your social media. So setting yourself apart from the competition, do you think it's ever too late to do that? Like, I think you're a better face.
I think what we're trying to aim at is we sort of came across you, as you mentioned, we connected on LinkedIn. And after looking at your LinkedIn, after looking at your impressive resume and CV, I think we can both say that we're really impressed and we're super big fans. I think now more than ever, setting yourself apart from the competition is pretty key, right? I believe that like being more visible in the world, I think this is from our perspective, we've covered this on multiple episodes with multiple people. And from everyone's sort of three takeaways and advice, it's always been like, set yourself apart, personal branding, build a website. We've heard that a few times over and over again. And so how much of the space in which young people can get opportunities is sort of not focused on personal branding? Because as you said, like, you know, when you're doing research, look at what's currently happening, build a project so that you can show legitimacy. Right, that you know what you're talking about, and then keep at that, keep on going, and then eventually the opportunities find you. Do you think a lot of people are missing personal branding? Maybe they're doing one thing, they're like actually investing a lot of time and energy into studying the field, mm-hmm. reading the research papers. How are you able to pull something like this off, which securing opportunities and stuff like that, when others who are trying to do the exact same but are missing the personal branding part? Like, what would you suggest to them, or what was your smoking gun kind of thing?
Yeah. So I think personal branding is definitely really important. And if you haven't started, like, go ahead to start now. Yeah. Like you said, it's never too late to start. But it's about like, so I think you really do need to, you know, make something out for yourself. So for example, a website is very important. I think everybody, you know, should have their personal website that really exemplifies them. And it even goes down to really little things like on your website, what's the color scheme? And like, why is that the color scheme? And branding for everything is important. So like for a company, for example, the fonts that you choose, the words that you choose, the colors that you choose, everything is really, really, really important. And like if the letters are curly, that could mean something different than if they're like block straight. And so putting real thought behind that, because in your personal website, that is what people see when they look up your name most of the time. And so you want to give them like, you know, a portrayal of what you really are. And so not to sound cheesy or anything, but I think it is about being yourself. And, you know, you don't have to like fancy it up and make yourself seem something like you're really not, just being legit in your own way and being sincere and showing that you're like humble, not just like listing out a bunch of your accomplishments on every social media platform, because that's not what people want to see. They want to see that you're relatable and that, you know, you work hard and you want to actually show your values through your different social media platforms. So for example, on LinkedIn, your bio says a lot. Your like the little thing underneath your name says a lot. The picture behind your headshot, that says a lot as well. So just really putting thought into every little thing and knowing what you want people to see when they see your name.
Right. I think it's pretty safe to say that, like you mentioned earlier, that people need to build like legitimacy if they want access to some of these opportunities, and then eventually get to the personal branding. For those people who the audience members or just anyone in general who's sort of still on the edge, feeling the idea of like imposter syndrome, like, have you ever gone through it when you were first starting? I know you said that in order for you to build legitimacy, you wrote your own article, like that first article you wrote. How did you get over that? And if so, what is your advice to some other people who kind of feel that way, where they're like, okay, I'm interested, let's say, for example, in renewable engineering, I'm interested in nuclear fusion. I want to write my first article. I read all the surface level. I want to reiterate all the things that I found into a Medium article. I want to write that. I want to publish it. And I want to share it on my LinkedIn. Now, before I hit publish, before I share it on my LinkedIn, I'm worried that there's going to be an industry leader that I somehow connected with who's going to comment or say something. I'm worried about what the legitimacy that I have in front of my peers who probably are doing way more advanced things than I have. Did you go through that? And if so, what is your advice to someone to kind of like jump that first, I guess, hurdle?
Yeah, for sure. I think it goes back to like being afraid of failure. And of course, you're going to be afraid of failure at certain points. But really, I think it's always about weighing like the best case scenario and the worst case scenario. So for example, if you post an article on your LinkedIn about fusion energy. And you know, you have experts in the field looking at this article, maybe. They're probably not going to read it super in depth, but the worst case scenario is, you know, they comment, they say, I hate this article. This is very false. This part was bad. This part was bad. And this part was bad. That's probably not going to happen. like the best case scenario is maybe you gain a connection, like someone reaches out to you about that article. And it's just, it's like about being realistic and also having the boss mentality to be okay with everything not going perfectly, maybe. So for example, another thing that comes to mind is like mentorship. And when you're reaching out to people on LinkedIn, I mean, the worst case scenario there is that they just say no, which isn't that bad at all. Maybe it's just like you're embarrassed, but that's not a big deal. And then the best case scenario is maybe you like you gain this really cool connection, you get opportunities down the line, you maybe intern at their company, things like that. And so it's being realistic with yourself, getting past that fear of failure, and having the boss mentality to be okay with these worst case scenarios. And being realistic.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to move on to your book?
Yeah.
So I guess now we'll give you a chance to advertise your book. What is it about? What's its name? And where can people buy it?
Yeah, so it's called Chronicles of Illusions, The Blue Wild, and it is a magical realism novel about these two girls traveling through these ancient chronicles in an Athenium, and they have to retrieve an artifact from each chronicle to save their lost brother. But every time they leave a book, everybody in that book dies. So all the characters, and you know, they're interacting with these characters, and then they have to basically kill them. And so, you know, they're like telling themselves that they're illusions, but there's all this drama, and like one of the girls falls in love with one of the characters, and you're touching on like real world problems here and things like that. And so that's kind of an overview of what the book is about. Basically a quest traveling through an ancient Athenium to retrieve articles or artifacts to get their brother back. And so in terms of where it is available, it's available pretty much on like every online bookstore, probably like so it's available on WH Smith, Chapters, Amazon, Waterstones, Barnes and Noble. And then it's available in store in some places, but with COVID, that might be harder to do. So that's easier to order online. But yeah, and then you can just pick it up at Amazon if that's easiest as well too.
And what are your future plans with the book? Are you planning to write a sequel or like any other books?
Yeah, so right now, like still like trying to market the book as well, but I did write a sequel, and I'm in the editing phase with it right now. So it's with my editor, and then he'll send it to me in like mid-June. And then I'm going to try and hopefully get a contract for it by the end of the year. And so that's my novel writing right now. And then I'm also writing a children's book series on emerging technology. So definitely different to what I've written, because mostly it's been like longer books. But I am really passionate about writing. I'm really passionate about technology. And so I wanted to put the two together to get students more excited about these STEM topics that a lot of people don't know about, because there are a lot of these impactful technologies like blockchain and artificial intelligence and nanotechnology and brain computer interfaces. And so I want to write about those in very simplistic and also fun ways just to inform these future change makers.
For sure. And I think that could, you sort of answered your question as to why you kind of got interested in writing. I'm just wondering, like, with regards to your first book, it often seems a bit kind of a set apart from like some of the other things that you're working on. For someone like you, what got you interested in sort of the fiction niche? Often, I'm not really a critic of fiction. I kind of like it in the sense that like, if there's a sort of deep undertone to it, if it's actually conveying something much more bigger than the idea of simply just being a fiction book, if it has a deep theme, various topics that it's covering. What do you find unique about fiction versus like, let's say, for example, just reading a nonfiction like research paper per se?
Yeah. Well, I've always really loved writing fiction, specifically fantasy, because like you can create anything, and you know, you can create your own symbols that maybe symbolize some deeper topic, for example. So I really love the fact that, you know, I can create my own creatures, I can create my own worlds, I can create my own characters and, you know, breeds and things like that. And you really have no boundaries within fantasy. And I've never really tried writing nonfiction just because, you know, it does have to be accurate because it's nonfiction. Whereas it's with fiction, you can just like play around with whatever you want there, I guess. And you know, they bring very different things. So within fiction, when I write fiction, it's like kind of a creative outlet for me and, you know, expressing my ideas. Whereas with nonfiction, I haven't actually written nonfiction books or anything, but within articles, that's more like learning and educating. And so they bring me very different services, I guess. And, you know, they both bring me value for sure. And people have their preferences, but I prefer to write fiction books just because just like really letting your imagination go wild.
For sure.
Yeah, I think that brings us to our last topic. Is there any way our audience can connect with you, like social media or website, anything you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, I do have a website, just like nylamalu.com, if you want to connect with me there. And then I have like platforms, so just like LinkedIn and Twitter and, you know, the IG, things like that. Yeah, feel free to connect with me on anything.
Okay, yeah, we'll put those in our description so our audience can find you.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I think our last topic now is the three takeaways. So as our audience knows, this is our recurring segment. These three takeaways can be anything said on the podcast or any lessons our guest wants to leave with you guys. So with that being said, what are your three takeaways?
Yes, I would say my first takeaway is like not fearing failure, being okay with the fact that you can fail and like really falling in love with the problem. My second takeaway would be having boss mentality. That is really important. If you want to go out and build these groundbreaking ideas, you have to have the boss mentality to put yourself out there and, you know, create content and seek those mentors, things like that. And then my last tip would be building projects, and you can start now. You know, that's even better. So the earlier, the better. Just start now, start building projects, start doing your research and going deeper and coming up with ideas so that you can make real impact.
For sure. Yeah. And thank you so much, Nyla, for being here. We're going to definitely reach out to you post-interview to get a few like primary sources or any sort of research papers that you suggest for a beginner's kind of one of our audience members that kind of want to dip their toes in this sort of space. So we'd hope to reach out to you for that. We just want to thank you for coming on and giving us a bit of your time.
Yeah, thank you. This was a really fun
podcast. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And thank you to the audience for listening this week. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, comment, and share. Check us out for an audio-only experience on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other outlets. Follow us on all of our social media, and please consider supporting us on Patreon. All of these links will be in the description. That's it for us today. Welcome to the new world.